Welcome, Hog fans, into the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. I'm Blake Sutton from Whole Hog Sports. I'm here with Scotty Bordelon of Whole Hog Sports. We are inside the Basketball Performance Center on campus at the University of Arkansas. Mike Anderson just finished up his press conference to preview the SEC Big 12 Challenge game against Texas Tech this weekend, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But first, let's talk a little bit about the win against Missouri last night. Hogs needed that one in a bad way after going on a four-game losing streak, which was the first in Mike's tenure at Arkansas. They needed that one. Didn't look like they were going to get it in the first half.
No, not at all. They were, I think last night, you know, Mike says a lot that he says all the time that he wants them to start clicking on some cylinders.
At least some cylinders.
Yeah, some cylinders. They hit on a lot of them last night and kind of got back to, you know, playing pressure defense, not just like in the half court. Like the half court defense was pretty solid outside of them losing Mark Smith for a handful of threes, which those are breakdowns I think you can fix. And just kind of maybe just a lapse in your defensive philosophy or whatever. But they forced a bunch of turnovers, got out and ran in transition. Dan had another double-double. I think it was his eighth of the year. Reggie played solid off the bench. Isaiah Joe went nuts again. Mm-hmm. Second time in league play, he's hit six or seven threes. That's pretty incredible for a first year guy. So they needed that win bad, and it didn't look pretty early. I'm just like,
oh man.
Me and you were sitting next to each other. I'm like, this cannot be happening.
Oh yeah,
again.
What, 7 minute scoring drought in the first half?
They've had scoring droughts of like 6 or 7 plus minutes. It has to be in like their last two or three games, which is just, it's mind boggling.
And I think what's really strange about it is it keeps happening at home. It happened against Western Kentucky, it happened against Georgia Tech, Florida, LSU. It's happening in all the home games they've lost.
Especially Florida. That one was pushing like 9 minutes, or 9 minutes, which that was ugly.
So yeah, when it was 14-2 last night, I'm thinking, man, they're gonna lose to Missouri and they're gonna have a 5-game losing streak. And
then have to go to Texas Tech.
Yeah.
And then might get beat up there. If your spirits are low, you're just gonna walk into that one with your head already down and your tail tucked.
Yeah.
So
gotta give Arkansas credit. They battled back and they cut the lead to 2 by halftime and then ran away with it late in the second half.
That shot Dan hit right before halftime was one of the wildest shots I've seen in a while.
It was like a wild shot.
His back was to the baseline. His back was to the baseline. And Mike said right before he walked out of his press conference, he said that when Dan threw it up, it hit the backboard somehow on the way up and then just ricocheted perfectly. And Dan was pretty hype about it running to the locker room. I hadn't seen him like that hype. Like, he normally gets that hype when he dunks.
Yeah.
When he dunks the ball, not on a shot like that. That was Mike thought it was a pretty big momentum play, and you kind of have to agree with him.
Absolutely. They had been down by 13 in the first half.
Yeah.
Battled back to within, if I recall correctly, they battled back within 1, and then Missouri hit a 3 and went back up by 4. Mm-hmm. And then that was when Dan hit that acrobatic wild shot to cut it to 2 by halftime, and so the crowd, that got the crowd back into it. I think it got some, gave them some momentum going into halftime. All was not lost. And what I noticed last night was that we talked about a little bit about this. They try to build themselves as the fastest 40. That's the branding. Mike Anderson wears the T-shirts. It's on the backdrop when they have press conferences, fastest 40. We looked it up going into the game last night. They're actually the 34th fastest.
Yeah, they play at the 34th fastest pace in the country.
And after last night, they're now the 30th fastest.
Yeah, 30th fastest 40.
They increased their fastness factor by 4 after the game last night. But you saw it in the second half. They were trapping more. They were trying to get steals. They were turning Missouri over a lot. They were getting transition baskets, and that's supposed to be what the fastest 40 is. That's supposed to be, you know, quote-unquote hog basketball.
Yeah.
And they finally got back to it in the second half last night, and we haven't really seen that during the four-game losing streak.
Yeah, you hear Dan all the time talk about, we have to get back to playing hog basketball. Mm-hmm. Like, you hear him saying it just like that.
Yeah.
And they did, and a big reason why, I think there was a couple reasons why. Like, Reggie came off, and I wrote last night about him. Like, he's kind of, we know that he's the best option at the 4, mm-hmm. the 4 spot, but you don't really know what to do with him as far as, like, do you start him? Do you keep bringing him off the bench? Because you still have to fill that four spot unless you go to a four guard lineup.
Yeah.
So I thought he played pretty well. He was plus 25 when he was on the floor. Arkansas outscored Missouri 57-32 when he was on the floor, and Missouri turned the ball over 15 times on his 42 defensive possessions, which is outrageous. He had two steals, that one in the first half that turned into a Desi Seals transition bucket. And then in the second half, with less than 3 minutes left, he comes up with another steal, and Isaiah Joe hits his seventh three, I think. They kind of blow the game open. I think he puts it in an 11-point game. He was enormous. Like, not even the steals. Like, the steals were great because they turned into points eventually. But, he was phenomenal. And plus 25 on the floor, that's really good. Like, I feel like he's the obvious answer at the four. But just the other deflections, like he was getting his hands on the ball and stuff too. And then the guards off the bench, Keyshawn, like he didn't put together another really good offensive game, which I thought he might do with the game kind of going up and down. But Desi was pretty solid too. I think he had 8 points and a few steals too. Those bench guards and then Reggie, you combine those with a couple of the starters, and that lineup was pretty deadly.
Yeah. And speaking of Reggie Chaney, you're asking, like, what do you do with him? He's played better coming off the bench than he has when he's started.
Yeah.
So, yeah, obviously he's your best option at the four, but if he's playing better when he comes off the bench, how do you start
him? It's a conundrum with that four spot. And Mike said he's going to keep going with, like, the brother-in-law thing.
Yeah.
But get this. Like, so Reggie started two games this year. Those are the two games where he's played the fewest number of minutes, I think. No, he only played five against Florida, and I think he played like 10 maybe in his other start against Texas State. And those two games that Reggie started are the games that Gabe has played the most minutes.
Mm.
So it's like Reggie doesn't go out there and just like go get it like right off the bat, and I think Mike just goes to another option.
Yeah.
He's averaging, like I looked it up this morning, he's averaging a little over 6 points, three rebounds, a block, a little more than a steal per game, and he's shooting 54% from the floor in games that he's come off the bench in league play. And then when he starts, you know, he only played I think he played 5 minutes a couple of games ago. So I don't know what you do. And me and Dudley were kind of joking about it last night. Do you let Adrio keep starting, let him come in, let him miss his long jump shot,
sub him out,
bring Gabe in, let him get an offensive foul, and then put Reggie in and just say go? I don't know what you do at the four spot, but you know you have to keep playing Reggie. But it's kind of apparent, and I don't know if two games is like a big enough sample size to say that he can't do well when he starts. Like, I think you just have to keep trying it, let him play through some of the struggles that he's had, because I think he's talented enough, and I think he's confident enough in what he can bring, that like if you just keep going and you trust him to get through like the misses or like a bad 5 minute stretch, like he's going to grow from it, and he's going to be better for it. So, and it's obviously a lot better when he's on the floor. That's very apparent.
Yeah, and you know, he doesn't look like a true freshman physically. He hasn't been playing like one really. So, but we do have to remember he is a true freshman. So
yeah, and I asked Mike about that last night. I said, what is it with Reggie? Like, looks like he's a lot more confident and more comfortable coming off the bench rather than when you've put him in the lineup. And he said, well, I can tell you he's a freshman. That's just – I was kind of expecting that answer. But, yeah, we have to remember that he is. He's still got room to grow, but he's such a plus when he's playing well.
Yeah. Another plus, Isaiah Joe is continuing to rediscover his stroke. Like you said, seven threes. He led the Razorbacks 23 points on 8 of 13 shooting. Yeah, 7 of 12 from 3. Just he's starting to get back to form where he was early in the season, like in the red-white game, the exhibition games, the first few non-conference games, he was lights out. And then, previous few games before this, it's like he couldn't find his stroke. But
yeah, like last night.
He had it last night.
Before the game yesterday, I was looking up some like his – when Arkansas loses and when Arkansas wins, what are his splits in those games? And he shoots, going into last night, he was shooting 46% from three when they won and 40% when they lost. Mm. Like, you're still shooting 40% in losses, which is really good. That just tells you how good of a shooter he is. But Arkansas just takes on a completely different dynamic when he's knocking down shots and he's getting lost in transition and not hesitating. And Jalen's finding him. Like, Jalen had one of his best games, I thought, last night. Yeah. Like, kind of quiet, but he still finished with 10-6, no turnovers.
Yeah.
First time he didn't have a turnover since A&M.
I was actually just about to bring that up because the big story was Isaiah hitting all those threes. But, yeah, Jalen had 6 assists, 0 turnovers. A quiet, you know, quiet game for him, but it was a pretty integral piece to the win last night against Missouri.
And that was his fourth game this year where he's had 6+ assists without a turnover, 4-0, and or he's lost 4-0 in those games. So that's obviously like a big key. And I wrote about it a little bit too. Like, when he takes care of the ball, when he values it and doesn't play too fast. Like, sometimes I think he can be sped up a little bit when things aren't going well. Like, he tries to force some things, but when he's under control and he's trusting the guys around him, Arkansas's offense is, like, overall this season has been fairly average, but it can be a little bit above average for stretches when he's taking care of the ball, and they need some of those stretches.
Yeah.
when they're playing teams that are, I guess, superior to them.
Well, and man, that dunk that he had, I was sitting next to you and our colleague Dudley Dawson. I made the comment after that dunk that he looked like a flying squirrel flying through the air on that dunk. He got up so high. He sprung so high.
He just kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I don't think anybody in the arena or on the floor was expecting him to do that.
I wasn't. But he came
just
off.
Came out of nowhere and just flying through the air and just slammed it. Everybody was just kind of stunned when that happened.
Yeah, but he came on that play. I saw a video of it this morning. I think from one of the people that Jalen's pretty tight with, and it just came off like a simple high ball screen from Reggie, and Mason, I guess, was kind of clogging the lane, and he ran over toward where Mike normally stands just to clear some space, and Missouri's defenders were just like all turned around and didn't know what to do.
Yeah,
and Dan was standing like in the right short corner. He had the floor space, like his guy was on the block, but. I don't know. I feel like you have to kind of come up. I feel like in that situation, you would have to like allow Dan to like catch in the short corner and cut off the drive. But the defender just watched, and that was probably one of Jalen's better plays of the year. It was just, that was super aggressive.
Yeah, got the crowd into it, got the team hyped up. That was another thing I saw last night. I feel like in the first half, Daniel Gafford, and he's done this in several of Arkansas's games this year, he seems kind of disinterested and isn't really doing anything to get open. He's not making any moves. He's kind of just standing there and like just trying to stick his butt out into his defender and stick his hand up in the air. But when he gets a big dunk, it just changes him. He's suddenly it's like he's interested in actually being there and wants to play basketball.
It was him that had that big one-handed putback slam last night.
I think that was it. And then when he's going up to the other end of the floor, he's clapping his hands and you can see him like getting into the game. And he's giving more effort, you know.
Right.
And you know, it's got to be tough for a guy like Gafford who has the NBA draft on his mind, and this is a team that, you know, not to be Debbie Downer, this is a team that's probably not going to make the NCAA tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, there's probably a lot going on in his head when they do get down like 14-2. He's probably thinking like, you know, why did I come back to do this? But then once he gets some dunks and some putbacks, he gets back into the game and it just totally changes this team. But if they are going to make any kind of postseason, they need him to be into the game.
Oh, for sure.
Regardless. And I'm looking at the schedule right now. They really don't have a good chance to kind of string some wins together, in my opinion, because this weekend they're at Texas Tech. They come home next Tuesday against Georgia. I think that's a game they can win. Mm-hmm. But then next Saturday on the road at LSU. It's like if you were kind of looking at that Missouri game thinking like maybe this is going to get them back on track and they can kind of string some wins together, I just don't really see it. After LSU, they got Vandy at home and then at South Carolina. So we talked about this a few podcasts ago, but they don't have any more back-to-back home games the rest of the season.
That's tough. That's tough. So, like, we're looking at, I'm looking at their Arkansas's KenPom page, and like I guess the Georgia, LSU, Vanderbilt, South Carolina, Missouri stretch, I guess is like like the one chance I feel like you have to string some wins together, just because you know, three of those teams are outside the KenPom or outside the KenPom top 100, and Missouri is barely inside the top 80. They're at 79, but gosh, you look at that, like three of those games are on the road. That's really tough. South Carolina is what, 4-1 or 5-1 in the league? Like, they're just playing.
Yeah.
They're out kicking their coverage the way they're playing right now.
LSU is a top 25 team.
Vanderbilt took Tennessee to the wire last night in overtime. Should have won that game. They were up 6 points with like a minute and a half left and blew it.
But disappointing for Vanderbilt, but yeah.
Georgia's not any good. If Arkansas doesn't win that game, then you can forget about it.
But, I mean, yeah, that stretch, the Georgia, LSU, Vandy, South Carolina, Missouri, I mean, if they go 2-3 in that stretch, you think if they can win the home games, you don't really expect this team to win any of those road games.
Still, at the same time, though, if you win those games, like, you could beat – like, the only win that would be of any value to you is LSU.
Yeah.
Like, even if you beat those other teams, you're like, okay, well, those teams are inferior to you, like
– yeah.
In terms of, I feel like Georgia's one of the least talented teams in the league. Vanderbilt's a little bit odd to me.
Yeah, I think, it was because they were playing Tennessee and it was their home floor. I don't think Vandy will put a performance like that together again for the rest of this season. Yeah.
And they probably aided pretty big by that crowd last night. That place had to be a madhouse. But South Carolina's like another weird team. Like, they're 100 on KenPom, and like KenPom's basically giving them a 50-50 chance to win that game. But like, even if you do win that game, like, it's a road win, like, you'd be happy to have it, but I don't know that it adds anything to your resume, because it's not like South Carolina's anywhere close to being a top 25 team or anything like that. So Arkansas is kind of in a tough position, just that rough start to conference that just I think that this might be the year that the poor start to conference just kind of knocks them out.
Yeah.
And in years past, they've always had like the firepower to, you know, maybe win a game or two on the road that people weren't expecting them to, just because they could, like, Jalen Barford could score 20 plus points, or Daryl Macon could go to Georgia and score like the last 16 points in a double overtime game or whatever.
Right.
But I just don't see it.
No, and what, they started 1-4?
Yeah.
Now they're 2-4.
Yep.
I might predict like a 7-11 this season. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. I mean, it, obviously not a good conference record, but if they – so the record now is 11-7 overall record. So what do you think to get to the NIT or to even host the NIT, what do you think win total –
I think you should get to like 17 or 18 wins.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's – like, I don't think the CBI, I don't think would take like a 16-win team.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they want – like, these tournaments, like, even not even the NCAA tournament, those tournaments want a team that – like, Daniel Gafford's obviously going to be a draw because those tournaments probably want Daniel Gafford playing in their game.
Yeah.
But, like, at the same time, if it's a 15 or 16-win team – you're like, is it really worth it? Like, because, like, outside of the LSU game, he's, I think last night was the most points he scored in an SEC game. It was 13.
Yeah.
Like, he's not playing his best ball right now. But, I mean, still, like, it's hard to gripe about a double-double. You know what I mean?
True.
But I think it's fair to say he's not playing, like, his best right now. But I think you need to get, like, to 17, 18. 19 wins would be, I think you'd be pushing NIT.
Yeah, I think 19 wins, I think they might even host the NIT.
Yeah.
But they would need to win, what, 8 more conference games?
Yep.
I don't see that happening.
And they've got 1, 2, 3, 4. They've got 6 home games left. So the numbers,
even
in your favor.
Right. Even if you win all your home games, you still need to pick up a couple on the road.
In your road games, like, we've gone over the road games before, LSU, South Carolina, Missouri. Like, Missouri's winnable on the road. Then you got to go to Auburn, Kentucky, Vanderbilt.
It's tough. I think you're right. I think this slow start to conference play is really going to bite them, because they're just not going to have that many more opportunities to string wins together.
Like, if you play your average game at home against Florida, you win that game.
Yeah.
And you're looking at it a little bit differently. If you can defend at all against LSU, you win that game. Like, mm-hmm. if you just defend Naz Reid, like, you don't leave Naz Reid wide open for four threes.
Yeah.
It's a different game. That's just that right there. Like, I don't know that you expected Arkansas to go beat Tennessee or Ole Miss on the road, but just having those two wins at home, you'd be feeling a little bit different about this team, because you're like,
yeah,
we took a couple games against some pretty solid teams and we lost to who we were supposed to lose to, but we can still play our ball and win some games, you know. And you might be feeling differently about going to Texas Tech too, because they're on a little bit of a downhill right now.
Speaking of Texas Tech, that's a good segue into our Texas Tech preview of the SEC Big 12 Challenge. Yeah, they've lost three in a row, and the past couple have not been close. They lost, and they have been road games for Texas Tech, but they lost by 11 at Baylor, and then they lost by 13 at Kansas State and only scored 45 points. Yeah,
you know, I've talked quite a bit about how Arkansas is just a pretty average offensive team. Like, Texas Tech is even worse.
Yeah.
Like, they're so offensively challenged. They've got, like, two guys averaging more than 10 points, and one of them averages close to 20, and the other one's right around, like, hovering 10 points.
Yeah.
But I will say that Tech's top guy is probably going to be the best – might be the best player as far as, like, draft prospects in the game. I mean,
yeah.
he's Jarrett Culver is who I'm talking about. He's 6'6", sophomore guard. I mean, he's from Lubbock. He can fill it up.
Yeah.
He's really good. So
I think there's even added interest in this game because of who their coach is at Texas Tech, Chris Beard, who was at UALR when they won that game in the tournament. And so you have a lot of Arkansas fans.
Yeah, they beat
fans
Purdue,
that,
right?
Yeah.
UALR beat Purdue.
As 12 seed, I think.
Yeah.
You have a lot of Arkansas fans that are thinking, man, Chris Beard was so close. He was right there in Little Rock. He could have been our coach.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see what he's done at Texas Tech. I mean, they made the Elite Eight last year, and they're top 20 or top 15 team now.
Yeah. There was a thread on our message board the other day on the Basketball Insider Forum that said, does anybody have Chris Beard's number?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's seemingly when you talk about possible coaching changes, I feel like Chris Beard's name comes up first every single time.
Mm-hmm. Because there's some familiarity with him just being in state.
Yeah. They think, well, you know, UALR got him. Why can't Arkansas
and
get
plus,
him?
Plus, like, you go out to a place like Lubbock, which is, like, literally in the middle of BFE. And, I mean, he's made, like, a top 10 program, seemingly from scratch. Because when – you remember when Dusty Hannes was there?
Yeah.
Like, Dusty was a guy that, like, didn't get off the bench there very often. And Dusty ended up being a – really, really good player here, but, like, wasn't playing a whole lot there, and they were kind of stuck in the mud. They had different coaches and in a pretty quick time span, if I'm not mistaken. So it was kind of a mess, but he's just gone there and cleaned it up pretty fast.
Yeah.
And gotten he got a kid that's going to – I think he's projected to be a lottery pick from Lubbock to stay there. And so that's really big for Chris Beard.
Yeah, and I've heard people say, you know – we've all heard people talk about Lubbock. I've never been to Lubbock, but I've never heard anything good about it.
Yeah.
And so they say, well, you know, why wouldn't he want to come to Fayetteville? Why would he want to stay in Lubbock? I read that he was an assistant at Texas Tech for like 10 years. So that, I mean, maybe that's his dream job. Like, it's hard to, you know, seems to me like that would, if he took that job after being an assistant there, you know, previously, for 10 years, that might just be where he wants to be, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
He's got the familiarity and history.
Once you feel like you kind of make it, maybe at the mid-major level, like a job like Texas Tech, like a place that, gosh, I don't know, like, I don't know if you'd want to call it a sleeping giant, but he's kind of turned it, like, it kind of is that, I guess, if you think about it, because it went from nothing to now Texas Tech's playing marquee primetime games against Duke in Madison Square Garden, and everybody's really tuned in and watching. So, I mean, I don't blame him for going to Tech. I don't see if he stays there. If he stays there, because there's always coaching turnover in high major conferences and things like that. So, who knows? He's done a terrific job there, no doubt.
It's going to be tough. Texas Tech, I'm just looking at their KenPom page. He's got them 15th. They're, 15-4 on the season. Mm-hmm. This is probably going to be the best team that Arkansas has played up to this point all season.
Yeah.
Well, Tennessee. I left out Tennessee. Yeah. I think Tennessee is probably better than Texas Tech. But
defensively, Tech. Yeah. According to KenPom, is the best team and is number one team in the country in defensive efficiency. So, got that to look forward to. A struggling offense against the best defense in the country. So,
well, we'll see what happens. Arkansas will need Isaiah Joe to have his stroke. They'll need Daniel Gafford to get another double double. They'll need Jalen Harris to get some assists without turning the ball over too much. It's going to take kind of a perfect game for Arkansas
to really win. I agree. Like, Texas Tech is according to KenPom, they're 228th in the country in terms of, like, average number of possessions per game, and they're averaging, like, 67 a game. Mm. And so if Arkansas commits a bunch of turnovers and you lose some of those possessions because of mistakes, like, that's just going to take away possessions that you can go – find, like, you can go dump it down to Dan, or you could, like, Jalen could drive and kick to Isaiah for a three. And I feel like this is a game Arkansas might have to shoot close to, like, 45-50% to win, like, because the possessions are going to be limited, because Texas Tech, obviously, I mean, they want to grind it, like, they're going to want to really slow the game down. So you've got to, like, maximize your possessions on offense, not turn the ball over. And you've got to be really, really efficient. It's going to take probably Arkansas's most efficient game of the season offensively to win.
Yeah. Well, is that all? That's all it's going to take? It's just their best.
Yeah, just the best game of the year. Yeah, just go do that.
Well, we'll see if they're up to the task.
Double doubles from everybody.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And shoot really well.
If all the starters get a double double, I think they could have a chance.
Yeah.
But Arkansas takes on the Red Raiders of Texas Tech in Lubbock, 5:00 Saturday on ESPN2. I think our own Bob Holt is going to cover the game, so we'll have coverage.
Bob will be out there.
Bob will be out there asking questions in the post-game press conferences. So keep it – I was going to say tune in to Whole House.
Keep it locked.
get all that coverage from Bob and the team at wholehogsports.com. But for Scotty Bordelon, I'm Blake Sutton. We are in the Basketball Performance Center on campus at the University of Arkansas. This is the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.